This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 2nd of February, 1954. The title of this lecture is Havingness, Calm Lines. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
All right, this is February the 2nd, 1954, afternoon lecture. Let's get now on the subject of communications. I was talking about it a little bit informally. Let's find out what's happening with regard to preclear. And I don't know whether you've added this up or not, but what I've been talking about in terms of communications and automaticities and so forth all apply in terms of havingness. You might think that we're on a different bin or we're doing something radically different when we're doing havingness processing. No, we're not. We're talking about the same thing. We're talking about C to E. Now, your PC can't get to C to get to E, he figures. Well, the only C there is where he is, and he's got to put that line through straight. Now, why does the bank look so silly, and why do you have these large coils of wire with all this mass of loose ends that he's trying to get through? You don't want that coil of wire. What you want is from C to E. Simple. Routine. Nothing to it. All right. We don't want that coil of wire. Then we'd certainly better either string a brand new wire from C to E, which unlimited processes do, or we had better knock the devil out of the existing coil of wire. Now, what's wrong with this coil of wire? It's an interrupted communication line so that you get an enormous number of C to E's. You have interposed arbitraries in the line which give commands of their own, ridges which, when reactivated by energy themselves, give obsessive, compulsive, or inhibitive directions to the preclear. We get back to ridge running, we see walk, can't walk. So instead of saying walk to the body and have the body walk, this individual says walk to the body, then something says can't walk, something else says maybe you better use a car, something else says maybe it's ham sandwiches. And the fellow decides he's hungry. And so he eats. Now, what's the difference then between a straight C to E, theta to body, one communication line, and one of these snarled up masses that you try to wade through with the preclears with which you have trouble? The difference is simply that the line itself has a lot of C's in it. Tremendous number of C's. Causes. And so we get the preclear searching relentlessly to try to hunt out these C's, which are other than himself. When we finally locate the preclear, he locates himself. He's probably sitting apathetically back in one corner of his head, about the size, he feels, of 1/16th of a microcell, sort of watching the parade go by. But when he gets ambitious, he's in there trying to root out a few C's. Well, the devil with the C's, the only reason the C's operate, the only reason these hidden sub-causes in the communication lines operate is because he has imbalanced the potentials of the line. If you had a gallon jar connected at the bottom to another gallon jar, and if one of these gallon jars was full and the other one was empty, and there was nothing really to bar the difference between them, you have a difference of potential between these two jars, don't you? If you then opened up this little bypass line from the bottom of one jar to the bottom of the other jar, you'd get two half-full jars, wouldn't you? Well, much more important, electrically, you'd get something of no difference of potential. So you get a null. So the C's to E's run like this. C, ridge, E. C, ridge, E. And this C is all charged up, and the E is completely flat. So you get explosive activities in the bank whereby the seas flip over to the east side of the ridge and back and forth again, and you get the swapping communication line. Now let's look at this in the overt act motivator sequence. An individual doesn't do certain things because he's sure that if he does these things, something will happen to him. So he does one of these things anyway, so sure enough it happens to him. Well, overt act. He does an overt act, and by charging up the C side of the ridge, now if you could see this, you know, as a sword put through a slab of bacon, you'd get the idea. Put a sword through perpendicularly through a slab of bacon and call the point of the sword E and the handle of the sword C. We'll see we're going through something there and that there is a ridge there between C and E. All right, that's the way that communication line looks. So at C, we get tremendous rage, power, and overt act, oh man. And the fellow at C doesn't want to blow the other fellow down, or he feels he can't blow him down just by ordinarily saying cease to exist. So he throws up this ridge, this slab of bacon there, to keep himself from getting a flashback. The sword goes into the individual that he's trying to kill, and the potential of that individual suddenly ceases to exist. So you get a zero potential, while you still have a highly charged potential. So the C part of the sword is way up in charge, and the E point of the sword has zero charge on it. And they would neutralize very easily, except for one thing. The individual wielding the sword has put up a screen between himself and the individual. This is an actual screen, by the way. A screen between himself and the individual to keep himself from being hurt by the person he is trying to kill. And having put up that screen, he now has something which operates something on the order of the insulation strips in a condenser. And you get C to E, and then he goes and he kills somebody else. He gets a big lot more potential on the C side of the sword and zero potential again on the E side of the sword. And maybe he kills a few more. Now, one day, boy, is it really getting charged up now, you see, on the C side of that slab of bacon. And one day, he just thinks about stabbing somebody, which is to put a little impulse onto that communication line. That's too much, and the ridge blows up. And he promptly goes into an E state. He just swaps ends. Now he's sad, and he doesn't feel good, and he feels somebody's trying to kill him. That's just his communication line. Now, if that ridge and all of these engrams had blown up at the same time and they'd merely exploded, they would have equalized, but that isn't what happens. A fragment of one blows up enough to imbalance the situation, flips the ridge around, he's now looking at the back side of the ridge. The backside of facsimiles are black. Need I say more about an occluded case? If I have to say more, it would just be painting the thing over and over and over and over and over, same thing. The fella's done a flip. He's over on the E side of where he was on the C side. So his trouble is a communication line with a ridge in it. Well, he's silly enough to want energy. So he gets all these masses of energy. He's successful in life, you know, he acquires and has things. And all of a sudden he loses something, he tries to hold on to it, decides he can't have it, so he pulls in a mass of energy to supplement for that loss. This mass of energy is a whole bunch of these C to E slab of bacon communication lines. Oh boy, got mass. Also got dynamite in it. So now he doesn't know where the C's are or the E's are, and these communication lines are all connected with other communication lines, and every time he tries to energize any part of any of this mass that he has, these communication lines and ridges, any time he tries to energize any of that mass, a bunch of C's jump up. He says, I think I will have a sandwich. I'm going to kill the bartender. I wonder what that thought come from. I'm sane. And he goes out and he says, now I think I will drive carefully. And something says to him, run it into a tree, run it into a tree, run it into a tree. Well, what's happening then? He puts in a C impulse and he winds up at E. But he winds up as any E to any C. So there's no telling where he's going to go into the bank, but the only spots he can land in at his tone level are the E spots. So everything's a guinea, and everything has significance, and everything else must have caused it, but he never caused anything. Obvious, he is at E, so he couldn't be C. This is mechanical. Horribly enough, mechanical. That's the way Thetans put banks together, and that is the design of a bank. Now you can just ignore the whole mass and try to string a new line from C to E. You get away with that in some cases. Some cases have so many of these lines strung in so many different ways with so many peculiar things in the lines that the only way it can really be remedied is to restore the individual's mass so he will simply abandon the whole communication system. If you sufficiently restore his mass, he will abandon the communication system. But as you try to restore his mass, if he's in bad condition, all of these lines are liable to go into various and sundry automaticities. And they do some of the strangest automaticities. Now, the thing which you want to get started is the main automaticity, and that's the avalanche. The meshed universe has been pounding this fellow for 76 trillion years. Let's get the avalanche started and remedy all the mass he thought he ought to have. It's the meshed universe mass that we're interested in. We're interested in big planets and suns and spaces and so forth. That's what we're interested in remedying. If we try to remedy anything less than that, we're not remedying with adequate mass, and we're just sorting for significance. We're playing pat-a-cake. But sometimes you have to enter the case with these little things in order to build them into something as big as a planet. You build toward a planet as fast as you can, but you get something this individual can accept. What is the avalanche effect? It is simply the messed universe, 76 trillion years, having pounded the individual. Till he's got a point that he has a terrific appetite. He natively, naturally does have a terrific appetite for the messed universe. Fine. Nothing wrong with the messed universe. And so his hunger for it is supplemented by the fact that it obligingly pounds him from every quarter continually. So we have this individual with an avalanche to be triggered. It's there. Don't ever doubt about that. Now, the skill of the auditor depends to some degree on the timing with which he does this and with attention to what's happening. But this is the sort of a manifestation he's liable to have happen early on a case that's real bad off and is one of these cases that can't reject but is trying madly to reject. This case is a mass of masses. All these masses have significances. Truth of the matter is, they're merely there in lieu of better masses. And if you can give him these better masses and bigger masses and denser masses, then he's happy. But let's not try to do small masses when we get big masses. It's just a matter of quantity, that's all, not a matter of significance. So we start in with these tiny little masses of some sort or another, and we will immediately wind up with various strange manifestations because the C to E lines and their ridges are composed of simply these odds and ends of automaticities and so forth. Makes automatic machinery and so forth. And what do we get? We get something weird and peculiar, maybe like this individual. We say, what can you reject? Now let's get something you can reject. And he thinks it over and he works and he works and he works. Male, he works at it and thinks over this and over that. And the odd doesn't help him out. The auditor should help him out, however, a little bit, because the individual can't look at what he could reject. He's too faced into what's liable to hit him. So we finally, let's say, run into something rather strange and peculiar that this individual really can reject, and we find out, excusing your presences, it's menstrual fluid. A man. Odd. He does, though. Pam! All of a sudden, an automaticity turns on, which just splatters the scenery, see? Bang! thud, crash. Doesn't happen again. He just got this one wham, and that's all. Well, we find something else that he can run, and it runs one wham or two whams, and that's about all. Then we get something else, and it runs one wham or two whams, and that's about all. You know what this guy's trying to do? He's just trying to take the significance out of a mass of energy rather than create some new energy. He's just playing around with it. Now, if you left those things run in just the one bang proposition each time, you'd, of course, getting very badly restimulated after a while. So when one of these one shots turns up, you make him run it three or four more times, regardless of what happened. Make him do it himself. Just an automaticity. You handle it like an automaticity. It turned on suddenly. You asked for it. It wasn't ready to run. It went once, and you make him do it three or four more times so as to take the edge of it off. And that's about all there is to that. You sort of run it as an engram, if you please, momentarily. Just so it won't backfire too badly at you, because you're going to tangle up his bank if you start playing around like this, because he's tangled up already pretty badly. Well, there is another effect besides the avalanche, and that is the burst. You can make an individual do this consistently who is having trouble holding everything together and not rejecting and not resisting and resisting and rejecting and all mixed up into one. Well, you can have this burst effect whereby you have him set up something which he has to put a shield around to protect. He'll set up something like a precious vase or something and puts this heavy shield around it, and he'll find out the shield will instantly burst. It's an automaticity. Every time he tries to protect this thing, why, the shield bursts. Well, you can burst more ridges that way. You can run out the automaticity, because after a while, the automaticity's gone, and you set up things and make them burst. The preclear makes them burst. Now, you're not looking for anything strange. You're just looking for the automaticities, enough automaticities to get into a major inflow of heavy mass. You want good, dense material, sun, stars, so forth. You want good, heavy inflow of this material, because it'll clean up and run out the entire bank. Now, I'll tell you some of these automaticities that are strange and peculiar that you run into. One of those is this burst effect. It doesn't matter what the individual tried to protect, why, the screen he would put around it would burst. It just didn't matter what he tried to protect. Everything would burst. All right, there's another one of these, analogous to that, and that is the drop-dead one. You find this boy, although he's meek and mild and so forth, every time you ask him to mock up something or somebody, it sort of disappeared. You know, he just didn't quite get it. Well, there's a funny thing. There's certain people that if he mocked them up, they would slam automatically to the floor and disappear as fast as he mocked them up. Now, an individual starts to mock up things to make them flow, then he gets around to stop the flow. So, very often, even this one, it depends upon you as an auditor to make him keep putting the same thing up to make the automaticity continue. You understand, the automaticity will run just as long as he's consciously feeding stuff into it to run. The automaticity does not create the planets and so forth to run against him. He's got to create those and throw those out there so they'll run. Many of your automaticities that you run and start into an avalanche simply fail because the preclear doesn't throw any more planets out there, that's all. He just stops. and gets around and blocks the flow. All right. This drop-dead one is interesting. It can be done in a bracket. Boy, people slam to the floor, puts up this person and that person, bang, bang, bang. Tremendous amount of hate behind it. They do it in overt acts, motivator sequences. You know, somebody else making him drop dead. As many as himself as he'll put up there, the mock-ups will slam to the floor and vanish. And as many as he'll put up of somebody else, they'll slam to the floor and vanish. This fellow has ridges which have so much killing rage in them, he doesn't dare tamper with them. It's just too hot, that's all. But of course, a body isn't very much mass. So we're not interested really in bodies. This is just one of the peculiar things that'll happen rather than good processing. We'd much rather have him blowing up planets in some fashion, pulling planets in, you know, and keeping them from blowing up or something of the sort. Just anything to give him mass. And please remember that. It's just anything to give him mass. Now, we have a great many preclears who are holding so much rage in check, one way or the other, that they don't dare touch it. And so you get this weird manifestation of every time he mocks up a little bit of force, it flies out and knocks down the mock-up town he's got there, you see. I mean, he shuts his eyes and he sort of gets an idea of his surroundings. And he mocks up a little something, and wham, everything will go to pieces. Well, now that itself is an automaticity. And it's a good one to handle, because it's a lot of tension in the bank. But again, it's not remedying mass, so this is a junior proposition. But there's always something the individual can get and accept. As an auditor, your imagination had better be stepped up, and that applies to everybody present. I mean, way up. The most imaginative auditor, as far as materiel and case entrance are concerned, is, of course, the most perceptive auditor. He can look. And his ability to recognize a level of acceptance is good, but let's take somebody who is rather bad off, who isn't looking even vaguely at the preclear. The most obvious things for the preclear to accept completely escape him. Let's take a young girl. The most obvious thing for a young girl to accept be a man. You know, I mean, let's just be 1 + 1 = 2 about the thing. The most obvious thing for a young girl, except would be a man, boy, something like that. That's very obvious. All right, now let's get that young man or boy and deteriorate his quality or condition until he becomes very acceptable. There isn't a female of the species that you can't start an avalanche on with this, one way or the other. Just crack through the bank and away we go. Now, for a girl, that's one thing. The most obvious thing for a man to accept would be a good-looking girl. So we just change her around until she becomes acceptable, and again we get and can turn on, if we're sufficiently imaginative about it, we can turn on an avalanche effect in terms of women. That will keep running. I mean, it won't just run 2 or 3 times and stop. If it just runs 2 or 3 times or once and stops, then what we're confronting is the manifestation of something we can resist. So you really haven't got the person's acceptance level. You've still got something a person can resist or has some qualification about or some resistance about. Now, what the devil makes this pull-in so ferocious on some cases, on various things? It's because the screen was set up to resist them, so the other side of the screen is plastered with them, and the near side of the screen is zero of them. The screen was set up to resist eggs. far side of the screen then is plastered with stopped eggs. The near side of the screen, of course, is zero eggs. Well, after the screen is hit hard enough and long enough, you've got a terrific potential there of a tremendous number of eggs on one side of the screen and no eggs on the other side of the screen. Sooner or later, that's going to blow in. Well, you blow it in for the pre-clear simply by throwing in a few eggs. It was terribly elementary. You just blow the screen down. And that's why you get an avalanche. Well, if you're not starting an avalanche on an individual, you're just not being imaginative enough to imagine what sort of a screen, or perceptive enough to see what sort of a screen he has up there as the kingpin screen. Now, up in Maine and in logging districts of the world, they have what's known in the streams as log jams. Log jams are interesting things in that a tremendous number, thousands of logs may come down, certainly hundreds, and stop this way and that way in a stream and just block up and make a tremendous dam. Well, now some lumberjack has to go down there with a peavey and cork boots and run those logs till he can find the log which is doing the jamming. Now, he can pull a log that unjams it. You've always realized that there was something buttony about a case. There was something about buttons. If you could just hit a certain button on a case, it'd do something. Well, this is born from this, but you're looking for thoughts or symbols or concepts, you see, to be this button. And they'll never be the button. The button is mass of some sort or another, and it has to do with these ridge potentials. The button is what sort of an object has to be dumped into the pre-clears bank to explode the main key ridge. What sort of a commodity? It is a commodity. It does have mass. It does have weight of some sort or another. But remember that it can be a fluid. It can be all sorts of things. It could be a rock. One pre-clear that I ran into, unbalanced utterly. He kept talking about the Revolutionary War, and he kept talking about other wars, but there was a common denominator to everything he was saying, and that was simply cannon. I had him toss a few cannonballs, just drop a shower of black cannonballs in the blackness which was out in front of him. It blew up his bank. Well, that guy, for generations, had been resisting cannonballs. Now, it's very funny. Now, every once in a while, one of these ridges will get backwards. You see, C to E, and it turns around. Every once in a while, the ridges will get backwards, and that will confront the person with blackness. So which way did these cannonballs go? We just dropped a lot of cannonballs out of the sky on his head and around him just to see what the heck happened in the bank. You see, we just dropped the cannonballs in to locate what I'm going to talk to you about in a moment, the vacuums. And boy, it only took one cannonball close to his face to blow the whole bank outwards. Turned out the individual had been a cannoneer. In later wars, the profession of being a cannoneer didn't look much like an overt act. It was so impersonal. But in earlier wars, you generally opened up the cannon at the moment you could read the mottos on people's belts. It was real close in. And ships, when they were broadsiding each other, preferably were within 50 yards. And that was, by the way, a rather risky long range. Worked easily best at 10 yards. And maneuvering with sailing vessels had to be very expert because you had to lay alongside that close. Well, believe me, you could sure see what your cannonballs were doing. And here's an individual in tremendous action, driven forward, imminent threat and danger that close. So he's charging up screens and he's trying to keep from being hit. And oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, you talk about high charge screens. Well, you've got lots of them. So one cannonball, and it blew his bank outwards and left him with a clear visio of everything. Remarkable. But banks will blow inwards just as fast. But black visios very often blow outwards. That is, people who are occluded explode outwards. You'll get something of the sort, and you'll sort of drop it around or get the idea of it or get an idea that it's mocked up. It's much more likely to blow out before it blows in. Now, you see the silly position the fellow's in. He's got a reverse screen. It's supposed to protect him, but he's on the losing side of it. Well, if he's starting to protect it and he's on the losing side of the screen, why, therefore, anything that tries to come for him is caused toward him. And we have this problem with our preclear of occlusion and so forth, various things. This isn't totally the answer to occlusion, but it's one of the things that make occlusion. So we have our world of man in a rather tipped up backwards condition. People are afraid of being the effect of the darndest things. They're afraid of being the effect of diamond rings. They're afraid of being the effect of dollars and all sorts of things. And everybody goes around saying everybody needs or wants dollars, or courage or bravery have some value, or and so on. They carry on this as a social strata, and then the individuals within it get all out of line, and what their acceptance rejection levels are quite strange and peculiar. So as individuals, they can't fit into the woof and warp of the society, and everything goes kind of rough. Now, it isn't your mission to make an individual agree with the desires of the society, but it can be your mission to straighten him out so that he can have a self-determinism about his desires. It's done with mass. I repeat, even though this is very interesting, all these other manifestations, we're just going through that material to get to a problem of mass. We may have to start in with very tiny fluids or very tiny pellets or little stones. And one preclear, by the way, his acceptance level that he could get in torrents. What was his acceptance level on the part of his parents? Dust. He could get torrents of dust for his parents. Well, he was in a terrific dust storm immediately. Now, he just kept putting up more dust and more dust and more dust and more dust, and the darkness got less and less and less and less occluded and less occluded. And you say, well, he was running the engram of a dust storm. No, he wasn't. That was the biggest piece of matter he could accept, actually. And people went to dust, and so they were dead, and that's that. Now, if you will scatter over an individual in various parts of the immediate environment where he is, anywhere within 10 or 20 feet of him, objects of various kinds, I just say have him just get objects of various kinds out to that distance, not in terms of mock-up necessarily, but just ideas of them and so forth, he's liable to turn on and show up with some vacuums, vacuums of things. What are these vacuums? They're the near side, that is to say, they know something or other side of one of these ridges, and it makes a vacuum. And this vacuum gets so starved that anything he throws in the bank flicks over to it. He starts to put some energy out in front of him, and before he can even notice it, the energy has gone behind him. There's something hungry around him. In other words, these vacuums are pulling in all the available mass which he has. Now, you can often ask a preclear, which way are you pressing? Or which way does the pressure lean? And it's quite interesting that he will tell you it's right down over here to the right. Well, there's a screen down over there that is picking off of him energy. The world looks very peculiar to an individual who is in this condition. The world looks stranger and stranger and stranger because he tries to find C in his lines and he winds up with the E's. And the more C's he tries to find, why, the more E's he becomes, because he's using cause as his randomity. You got to get him up there to be cause. You got to get him to stretch a straight line, but if every time he tries to put an order into the bank, it goes someplace else compulsively and into one of these vacuums, why, he gets in very poor condition because he feels he can't create anything. He can create something, but it gets stolen from him by these vacuums before he has a chance to utilize it. Now, you ask the individual to exteriorize. He can't exteriorize because every little energy that he puts out or anything of the sort while he's trying to exteriorize simply snaps him back in again. His lines are all tight. He has energy starvation. The things that are starving his bank for energy are these vacuums, and they're located all around. Now, it's quite ordinary to start up one of these avalanches 8 or 10 feet from a pre-clear. Way out. Back of him, above him, below him, behind him, someplace. And let it run like mad. And just let it fly. That's routine. If a case is rather bad off. Now, a case is normally sitting on center or connected with his communication lines when the avalanche comes in and hits him personally. He's sitting on center. That is to say, his communication lines come into that point. He's occupying more or less the same point in his own bank that he has continued to occupy, at least for the last spiral. And so he's in communication then pretty well with his body and with the bank and so forth. You see why he would be centers, because the meshed universe is pounding from 360 degrees with photon sounds and all other kinds of things. And these sounds and so forth are, of course, ending and stopping with him at center. So if you get the poor in right straight at the pre-clear, well, he's in more or less his position. But what about pre-clears who have vacated positions or who have jumped over into old, earlier spiral positions? Or who have flipped over and become one of their automatic machines. They, of course, have vacated a spot in the bank, and their communication lines are going to this spot in the bank. Therefore, they're out of connection with their banks. They have flinched back from the place where they have occupied, and their communication lines, automatic machinery, and everything else is going into this spot which they have occupied. But they're not occupying it now. That spot is 8 feet away from them. Well, you'll find holes, electronic holes, around a preclear. Any preclear. That's because he hasn't consistently and continually occupied the same geographical spot with relationship to his energy deposits for the last 76 trillion years. What you call a spiral is as long as the person has occupied the geographical center of his electronic anatomy. That's a spiral. A spiral is the length of time a person has occupied the geographical center of his electronic anatomy. When he is no longer occupying it, why, the dance is over for that spiral. And you'll find individuals have gotten energy starved and have started pulling in the whole bank, and they pulled in these holes that belong to earlier spirals. Lord knows what fits in them. Dragons. You might have almost anything. Now you try to run this preclear on the basis that you're running Homo sapiens or a Thetan. And we find out that he's running a Thetan as we think of a Thetan. Well, earlier on the track he was a Robit, and one of his most successful spirals was all the way down the line. He was a Robit. He was running a doll. And what's acceptable to a Robit? I don't know. Maybe bent nuts and bolts. Quite remarkable, you see. You have to find out where your boy is stuck. Now, a preclear who has one of these vacuums near to hand is, of course, resisting in its direction remarkably. Now, again, what's one of these vacuums? These vacuums are just the screen. It's one side of that slab of bacon I talked about earlier in the lecture. It said, no something or others, you see. And the other side of it got filled up, and he's perilously holding it in balance so that it won't blow up. His communication lines are so lost that he feels that if he abandons one of them, he will go out of connection entirely with the body, will go mad and out of control. So we start to run courage on him, and as soon as we start to run courage on him, he goes into a franticness. You see the franticness that he would go into, because he immediately gets into the E side of these ridges. And the E side of the ridges wiggled a bit before it kicked off. As soon as the ridge burns down, why, then he gets the franticness on this line. There's not much that you can elaborate on with relationship to this, because having this process is just the same process I've been giving you. The only thing you've had new today and strange and peculiar to you is this vacuum manifestation. And it isn't too darn new because it's in the doctorate tapes of 8008. 14 months ago. Vacuums. When you run this, you'll find the preclear is facing the opposite direction or is tensed in the opposite direction to the point where the vacuum is, the key vacuum on the case. And he isn't looking at the vacuum. And you try to persuade his attention off of the main vacuum with sideshows, such as you've gotten decayed beans to run as a little avalanche. It's run for maybe 10 seconds, 15 seconds. And that's as long as he could afford to take his attention off the main vacuum. So it obviously, you just don't have the main vacuum, that's all. You start just dumping things around. You just say, well, get a shower of footballs. And they go in the most awry patterns, weird patterns. Get a shower of pebbles, or just get a dust storm. And get a shower of dust particles, some distance from yourself, to the right, left, behind you, and so on. And you say all of a sudden, gee, they're all pouring in right there. You say, good, throw in some more dust particles. Mark up some more dust particles to go in there. More dust particles to go in there, more and 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 more. And you may have the avalanche on your hands right there. But if it quits, why just have him throw some more dust particles in and move them in and throw them in and move them in and throw them in and move them in, you know, until you have repeated the automaticity enough to have sort of run it out and taken the tension of it off. Now, you don't have to clean up an automaticity very thoroughly, just a few times, but failing to clean one up, which has occurred with some change in violence, is a definite auditor flub. And you'll be picking up somebody's case where some auditor hasn't done this. Something showed up, something strange or peculiar began to rush in from the right. And the auditor said courageously, go on running, what you got coming in from the left. But this thing was rushing in madly from the right. Preclear's case stopped progressing right there. He has quit. He just put on the clamps and the controls on the bank, and there the bank is frozen. It's easy to pick up. You simply go back to the earlier auditing session. Let's pick up the automaticities which have occurred while you were being audited previously. And let's repeat those automaticities a few times. Just one, two, three, four, five times, doesn't matter. All right, you got that. Now we'll go on from there. And so we have cases locking up on unrun automaticities. But in spite of unrun automaticities, you can still pick the lock and pull out the key log out of the jam, even though you don't run them. You can still do that. It becomes a little more difficult, that's all. Tiny bit more difficult. Well, you haven't any case here that is terrifically representative of a real rough one. Because everybody here is in at least fairly good control and so on. When you get one of these cases that is almost out of control and is pretty psycho now and then. When you get one of these cases, pretty psycho every once in a while, almost out of control, and so forth, well, you have to handle this case with kid gloves, great care. Well, how do you handle that case? You do a lot of opening procedure, sometimes a lot of next to last lists, sometimes a lot of balancing one way or the other. And sneak things in on him gradually. Now, I'm going to give you a big surprise. This has probably come as a shock to you, how difficult this auditing is. It is tremendously beneficial for an individual to simply mock up and move in a mass. I hate to have to tell you that. You've got to find, eventually, the avalanche, which sometimes won't show up till an individual has moved in some masses of one kind or another. He's found some kind of a mass he could move in, and you move in the mass. Make sure you move in masses, though. Now, running Jeanette the other day, if you remember rightly, I just had her move in some heavy masses there. It was heavy enough for the moment. It was a house, four houses, so forth. We moved in masses till we got the automaticity running. So I was evidently talking to the ceiling the first time I told you about this. I must have been. I couldn't have been talking to you, because you're still having some trouble with some cases on having this, and you're still protesting that you can move things in and out consciously and under control, but they just don't avalanche in. I must have been talking to some other class. I couldn't have been talking to this. It doesn't matter how the mass got there. It doesn't have to be moved in by a roller-bearing machine or anything else. I'm just telling you the consequences of what's going to happen in adding mass to a case. It'll turn on the avalanche. So for a long time, some cases, you have to just move in masses. You get anything the fellow can consider dense and move it in. Anything else he can consider dense and move it in. Maybe he's got somebody stuck. Give me three people who aren't present. Fellow says, well, and she ain't present. My God, my father. Father's been walking around with him for years. He knew father was right there, but he never quite got the point of it, never quite penetrated through. There's somebody else present. Well, if there's somebody else present, let's remedy the havingness on this person, because obviously the havingness of the individual was low. Just to tell you in more professorial language, John came in bug-eyed one morning, and he said, quote, "The auditor that fails to run other people who aren't present ought to have his butt kicked. Because it just got run on me, and there was my cousin. He'd been there all the time. I knew he was there all the time. And there he was." He'd been walking around in life accompanied by his cousin. Well, now, obviously, then, this is a problem in havingness, isn't it? So we just move in some cousins. And we'll move in a lot of cousins, and we'll start fixing up the havingness of the individual by moving in some cousins. He obviously can have his cousin because his cousin's right with him all the time. And so we'll just move in cousins, and then preferably move in cousins in the gymnasium in which one had so much fun with the cousin. And then preferably the town in which one knew the cousin, making sure the cousin is in each one of the mock-ups of the town. Where we just move this in, and so we get an associative connected communication line which is running on a gradient scale. And the next thing you know, you can maybe have a piece of earth moving in with the cousin, and he'll have forgotten all about the cousin by that time. The next thing you know, there's a roaring avalanche going. And the bank suddenly starts to break up and explode and expand, and other things happen to it. I wish this were as difficult as you thought it was. Because if it was so difficult as that, I would be, of course, indispensable. And everybody's goal is to be indispensable. We know that. And they're telling you such things as these processes, I actually, to some degree, work myself out of a job. You're going to wake up one of these days to the fact that it's not difficult to move in some havingness on a pre-clear, even a totally resistive black five. It's going to be real difficult if you sit back and wait for him to move it in somehow or another. It's going to be real difficult if he sits up there and audits automatically and has a lot of other machinery going on like that. It's going to be real difficult. Let's waste some machines that make blackness. Let's waste some machines that audit him. Let's get some imagination into this auditing and take a look at the pre-clear and then apply the technique necessary in order to take the edge off the case and sail. Almost anybody present who is having any difficulty at all is self-auditing. some degree, somewhat. Well, fine, let's set up a lot of circuits. Let's set up a lot of automatic machinery, so on. Scarcity of auditors is something you can run. Oddly enough, one character was self-auditing, had such a vicious scarcity of pre-clears that they rolled in for about 45 or 50 minutes before you could even vaguely put a brake on the flow. And a terrific scarcity on pre-clears. So the person he was auditing, in view of his scarcity of pre-clears and people to audit, was himself. Cute, huh? Well, what's wrong with your pre-clear? It comes back to this, the significance ends early in the case. But the case always starts out with terrific significances. Well, the less you can handle of these and still be effective, the better off the case will be. You don't handle these very long, but you certainly better handle significances of one kind or another in order to get the case rolling. And what are we trying to roll? Well, let's roll a havingness avalanche. Well, how do we get him up to a point where he can roll a havingness avalanche? Well, okay, that's just this. We'll have him move in something that's terribly significant to him and that is obviously fixing things up for him and something that he can move in. And even if it's just wads of blackness or something of the sort, or pieces of coal or stoves or anything like that, and we get him to move this in one at a time, and then we have him move them in two at a time, and then have him make space by putting four of them out there and then crowding them together and then moving them in. And the fellow does this for a while, and all of a sudden the immediate energy hunger of the bank is satiated to a point where he can actually have something. Do you realize that step four starts in wasting things so an individual can have something? Now let's take the case of a milk allergy and see again that this is not way over and far afield and an entirely different subject than what we're talking about. Let's take a person who can't drink milk. And let's get then this connected with a person that can't have the energy and masses of the mass universe avalanching upon him. Now, let's just get a connection between these two things, and we'll find out that we have to waste the hell out of milk before this individual can have some milk. And after that, the person really can drink some milk. The person can't drink milk. How do we waste it? Well, we can waste it in various ways. Pour it down sinks. Throw dirt in it. Anything so it's really wasted. Put poison in it. Get milk and put poison in it. More milk and put poison in it. Well, this one I'm telling you about was run on a black fly that can't get mock-ups, and the person can now drink milk. I wish it were as difficult as you think it is. It isn't. All we had to do, though, was apply a little imagination to the case. Tiny bit of imagination. We just made it interestingly enough, imaginatively, that the individual, at long length, decided he could drink some milk. We had him waste milk in this fashion. We had him waste valuable milk. Had her waste, the last glass of milk left in the world, which was full of starving babies. And boy, could that person waste that glass of milk. Ha-wham, ha-wham, throw it away just like a shot. The more it was needed, the more it was wasted. And then we ran it up to a point where the individual finally could drink a glass of milk with great aplomb, although everybody in the house was sick from a strange illness which could only be cured from a glass of milk, and this person didn't have the illness, but everybody else did, and this person could drink the milk. We didn't do this in brackets. We did this straight creative processing and nothing else, nothing more. How does this apply to the mass universe? Ever occur to you, you might have somebody waste rocks? Waste getting well? Waste opportunities to go downhill? This person obviously can't have, so let's just take it in creative processing and wasting. And we'll work the case up to this point. You've got so many points of entrance on any of these things. See, the only reason the person couldn't have milk, they had a ridge erected against it. So all we had to do was actually work with enough mock-up mass until a ridge blew. That's all there was to that. And after a while, milk didn't have any significance because we mocked up enough milk. But what did we use to mock it up with? We used creative processing by wasting it. And we finally mocked up enough milk so the person could have milk. If we simply could have mocked up buckets of milk and poured them over the individual, and more buckets of milk and poured over the individual and more buckets of milk, we'd have gotten the same remedy. But the individual couldn't get, immediately at the beginning, a mock-up of a bucket of milk. So we had to start in with throwing the milk away in such a way that the person didn't have to look at it. Of course, this permitted a mock-up and mass to exist without the person seeing it, which is actually what wasting does. So we enter any of these things on a gradient scale. You can always do something, and you can always get a result. You can always have something to show for an hour's auditing. If you haven't got anything to show for an hour's auditing, you couldn't have done anything to the preacher. I mean, you just couldn't have done a thing. That is to say, you couldn't have tackled the problem the preacher had, not even for a moment. Were you on anywhere near the center of the line? You can be 100 miles off the track and still get results. So there's something about this, and there's maybe lots of significance as to why this takes place, but there really aren't any. The problem is much simpler than you think it is. The problem itself is solely to get the individual to be able to have masses, sufficient so that he doesn't have his engram bank pulled in on him. That's the total problem. How many ways can we tackle a problem? Well, we can get a few things unsquirreled, and we can get a few things set up and squared around, and this and that happen, all the time getting ready to dash in there with some masses. We want more masses and more masses, more masses. If you set out a quiet, orderly progress to find out what an individual could get a mock-up of, and you simply exhausted all possibilities, and finally you found it was one thing you could get a mock-up of, and that was a black billiard ball, and you had him mock up this billiard ball and put it in the center of his head, mock up another billiard ball and put it in the center of his head, mock up another billiard ball and put it in the center of his head. If you did this for about 10 minutes and then you found something else he could get a mock up of, and you put that in the center of his head and you put next in the center of his head and so on, he'd get there. And your hours auditing would show a marked gain in the preclear. Even if you did just that. Now you take a rejection case. Let's find three things they're not rejecting. It'll blow some ridges all of its own. Let's find three people that are not trying to help them. That's all. Essentially, then, we're not involved with a difficult problem. We're involved with a problem of livingness, and a person has negated certain kinds of livingness. He's negated them because he wants the mass, he can't have the mass, and he'll take anything in lieu of it. And therefore, it all gets very involved and significant. It's as significant as this: the person wants the messed universe and can't have it. So you give it to him in masses. He's got it. Then he can get mock-ups. He can get anything, he can do anything, he can exteriorize and so forth. Then we go on to SOP 8.0. We got no business hanging around with this havingness right at this time because we've been over it before. Okay, let's get in there and pitch on it now, and let's get a different frame of mind about it. Let's get the frame of mind that if you can audit for an hour without seeing a marked change in the preclear, you've skidded. You're not slipping. You've done slipped. Let's get some results. There's no reason why a preclear shouldn't finish up a session pretty darn starry-eyed that something's happened. If you can't make something happen with Scientology, let me tell you something. You can't make something happen with a sawed-off shotgun at 5 feet. Them's cruel words, but true. Now, you want something to happen with a preclear? How about wanting something good to happen with a preclear? And how about just wanting the preclear to have enormous masses and work it on a gradient scale until he can get them? That's all we're trying to do right now. So let's get going on it. Let's take a break and get in some auditing.